Hey guys, how's it going? Cello alcoholic. Sobriety date is December 18th, 2015. And just like to say, first of all, I'm super grateful to be here. I am a AR alumni, which is kind of cool. I haven't really done anything with AR since the pandemic hit, so it's really cool to come back. And actually, the first time I shared my story was at this meeting on a Sunday on Congress, when they had the location over on Congress. I'll never forget that, man. It's kind of stopped going because Knuckleheads became my home group. But I'd like to clarify, drugs are a big part of my story, but I do classify myself as an alcoholic. I'm a member of AA. That's just the program that works for me. And, you know, for me, like, the substance doesn't really have anything to do with the problem, right? So for me, alcoholism, the way I see it, is basically the allergy to any substance, the way I react to that substance, the mental obsession that I have surrounding that substance, and not being able to stay stopped once I've started. Or, you know, even if I do stop, it's pretty miserable, right? Because the alcohol, the drugs, that's my solution. But anyway, I'm going to go into a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I was born in Germany. My mom is from Louisiana. My dad is from Germany. She joined the military and got out of the military, met my dad. I was born. She left I was about 2 years old, just under 2 years old. She went back to the States and then back down. Then we ended up going to Mexico, and basically we didn't stop. It was a constant travel. Like, my mom is a super free-spirited, free like the wind, gypsy type person that goes wherever the wind takes her, right? Which is great. Like, I'd like to, you know, really make sure that I make clear how loving she was and how much she cared and how she would do anything for me. Like, my mom was the most loving mom in the world. What I saw then, you know, is, and what I still see now, is that a lack of responsibility was kind of where it went wrong in that relationship between me and my mother. But, you know, down in Mexico, living it up, always had food on the table. My mom was a teacher, and we just traveled a lot. We really did. We traveled all the time. And, you know, because of the traveling, I never really fit in anywhere. Always felt like was the new kid, basically, and eventually kind of just stopped making friends because that's just the way it was. And then my mom also didn't have the best choice of men, and, you know, there was some abuse involved, and also just where we were staying and stuff. Like, we stayed in this community house in Playa del Carmen when I was nine, and, you know, I was sexually abused there, and that, for me, that drew the line. I was like, man, I'm out of here. I'm fucking done with this. So I started hitting the streets and looking for other friends. I remember the first place where I really, really felt accepted was in Puerto Vallarta. I was like going downtown, and I just came across this huge plaza full of skaters, man. It was like 30 kids just skateboarding out there. And they took me in immediately, no questions asked. And it was great. It was like, man, I found my people. They don't care what you look like or what kind of a emotional baggage you have or how much money you have or any of that shit. Like, you know, they're just there to skate. Well, so I got a skateboard. I started skating, and turns out I wasn't a very good skater. So there was always that group of kids that hung out with the skaters but weren't very good skaters, but liked to drink and smoke weed and pop pills and stuff like that. So I was like, great. Well, now I really found my people. Like, this is awesome. And anywhere we would move, I was always able to connect. I'd just show up with my skateboard somewhere, and I could connect with those people. And hey, let's smoke a joint. Hey, let's drink some beer or whatever. And, you know, pretty soon, like, now looking back at the whole thing, like, excess was my number one. That's my problem. That's my vice. Like, I cannot do anything in moderation. It just doesn't exist for me. So drinking and smoking some weed really quickly went to, you know, ecstasy, acid, coke. Next thing you know, I'm like 12 years old smoking crack at house parties and shit, you know, like just very fast. Everything progressed super, super fast. And I was constantly getting in trouble and getting picked up by the police in Mexico. My mom had to come find me a couple states over somewhere. Hadn't heard from me in months. Like, my poor mother, man, I put her through so much. I remember this time, man. It's like my first God experience. I was probably about 13. Me and my buddy Dante, we're coming down. We went to Oaxaca. It's about a 20-hour drive from Playa del Carmen. We went to Oaxaca. We parked his car, and we took a little truck up the mountains to San Jose del Pacifico. It's another 5-hour drive through mountain passes, and like there's no rails on the edges and the cliffs. There's like drop downs a couple hundred feet and whatever. And we're coming back down this steep hill. We got, you know, a couple duffel bags full of weed in the back, and the driver and my friend, as we pass a cross where somebody had obviously driven over the cliff, they both make the sign of the cross. And I had bad experiences in the Catholic Church when I was younger, and I kind of like stepped away from all that. And they asked me, they said, what's wrong with Ito? You don't believe in God or what? And I was like, man, fuck God. God's never helped me. And not 5 minutes later, we hit this oil patch in the middle of the road. We did a 360. The two tires of the truck were hanging off of the cliff. We're all leaned back like this, like, fuck, we're going to die. and that was my first God moment that I'll never forget. Like, oh, but I mean, it didn't change anything. It was just an experience where I was like, God, maybe there is a God, you know, maybe I shouldn't talk like that about God. And, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it didn't change. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse and more, you know, intense and more contact with the police and worse friends and this and that. So my mom finally is like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. What are we going to do with you? Get you out of here. Let's go back to Germany. I was born in Germany. My dad's like this super like, you know, straightforward, strict engineer type. Not that we went to him, but my mom just thought Germany, that's the place. Well, we didn't make it 6 months in Germany because I was all right away just hanging out with the worst people, brought home by the police numerous times. So my mom, like, she does what she does best. And what I learned to do is kind of just run away from each spot where you get into trouble and know that, you know, the world's open to you, right? And so we ended up going to Barcelona, to Spain. And she ended up meeting a guy, and I was like, already, he was actually a really nice guy, but I was already set on I'm not going to have anything to do with my mom if she's with another guy. So I hit the streets, and Barcelona has a huge like squatter scene. So you can sleep pretty much anywhere, and lots of drugs. And for me, I'll never forget, because Barcelona was the first time I tried heroin. And you know how you like, I always hear people in the rooms talking about that first drink, and the way they felt it go down, and that sense of ease and comfort. And like, that's what I had with heroin. That was the first time that I felt completely at ease. And I was like, man, this is it. I found it. I found my calling. but the problem with that is it doesn't last long, right? It's a great solution for like a very, very short period of time. But it escalates so quickly, and you get drawn into that world, and it just becomes, you just become a slave more than anything. And I was bound. I was immediately bound. By the time I was 16, 17, I was really already done. I was finished. I was like, I want to get sober. I hate this shit. I can't live like this. I was starting to burn my bridges. I was screwing over friends and family and anything, you know, just to get money. And I always thought I was like this nice guy, or like, that's the image I'd like to hold in my head. Like, I'm this super nice guy, but really I'm screwing over everybody that comes around me. And so the downward spiral just kept spinning and spinning and spinning down. And I kept running away because I had the world open to me. So I just run to Mexico, run to Louisiana, run to Canada, run to Italy, run back to Germany, back down to Spain. And it was just every time it would just get worse and worse and worse. I had plenty of hobbies. Like, I thought I was okay because I could keep a job and a girlfriend and an apartment. And you know, I like to play music. I like to run. I like to box, you know. I'm like, I'm not, you know, which junkie spends 6 months training every day and makes it to the state championship in the Yucatan of boxing? Like, I'm not, there's no problem with me. But as soon as you lose, you know, I was too scared to go face my peers or my trainer. And the first thing I thought of was, oh, let's smoke a joint. Oh, turned into a line, turned into, you know, And the spiral continues going down and down and down. The first time I went to prison, I was in Germany, and we were just me and my wife at the time. Can't believe I was married, but yeah, we were just, you know, just basically just driving from Frankfurt to Rosenheim with, you know, a bunch of heroin in the car, and got locked up. Thought maybe that would work. You know, they only did like a year because they let me go to rehab, and I went to rehab and it was great. You know, you learn all these tools and ideas, but no rehab is going to get me sober if I'm not willing. If I'm not willing to put in any effort, if I'm not really ready, 100% ready, even though I was sick of it, I wasn't ready for suggestion. I was always bound by this sense of this necessity to have control in my life. Super, super important to me. For me, it was like if you relied on anything, whether it be another person or a higher power, it was weak. And it was weakness, right? So I get out of that rehab, and within a couple of days, I'm already shooting dope again, and met up with a buddy that I, a friend that I met in prison that was a burglar, and he got me into a bunch of stupid stuff in Germany, and basically just burglarizing all these casinos that closed at night. And I'll tie back into that later. It's actually really funny. It's really funny the way it all played out. But so 6-7 months later, after I was doing all that stuff, all those, burglaries and stuff in Germany, and this is the weirdest thing. Only in Germany do they send you a letter in the mail. Sir, you are a suspect. We found your DNA here and here. Please present yourself at the police station. Are you kidding me? Like, here they would have kicked down my door. Anyway, I pack my shit and I get the hell out of Dodge, right? I mean, obviously, that's the way I do stuff, right? And I'm not scared. I just leave the country. I go to Spain and then I fly back to Mexico. That's actually when I started boxing. That's when I actually got my ass kicked. That's when shit spiraled down out of control again. And that's when I came to Austin for the first time to live here. I had an uncle here. You know, I got a job. I was working in the service industry, met a girl, got an apartment, you know, just the same thing, like, oh, I'm fine. And met the dope man. And, you know, about a year of that and shit was, again, just the same old story, never really changes. And, you know, I just remember there's this point towards the end of that where me and the girl I was living with, my girlfriend at the time, we were fighting so intensely. Everything in the whole apartment was destroyed. Like every piece of glass that was whole was completely shattered. The windows were shattered. There was just the most intense fight we've ever had. And I've never hit a woman. And then that day we got in such a fight and I grabbed her head. I'm like, fucking listen to me. And without even knowing it, like I headbutted her and she had this huge black eye. And she's like in the bushes with me, hiding from the police that are walking through our apartment, trying to figure out what's going on. And of course she left and I'm left with the destroyed apartment, just thinking to myself, how did I get here? And then I kind of came to terms. And I think this was really key to my first step experience was like, I came to terms with who I was and what I was going to be. I used to be somewhat ashamed of being a person that used heroin intravenously. Like it was like not cool. I'd hide it from my mom and stuff, you know. At this point I wasn't hiding it from anybody anymore. Like my mom would come over, there'd be spoons, rigs, anything just on the table. Like I just didn't care anymore. This is who I am, this is who I'm gonna be, and this is how I'm gonna die. Don't care. Live, die, whatever, but you know, this is just the way it is. This is who I am. And I think that really scared me once I internalized that feeling of just fuck everything. Like that gave me just a slight little bit of willingness to reach out and ask for help. And my mom helped me, and Sims Foundation paid for me to go to rehab, and I went to AR, you know, and all the rehabs I went to were great. You know, there's nothing like special about, I mean, I love AR, it's super special, but there's nothing special about this in particular rehab center other than I had a tiny bit of willingness, just a tiny bit. Maybe I should give something else a try because my way of doing things is not working. And so I go And I'm still like looking at the wall and I'm reading all the steps and I'm, you know, reading through the AA literature and I'm not relating to any of it. And I think it's a bunch of bullshit. And, you know, I'm just like, God, this is so culty and I don't want to be a part of this. What am I doing here? Like, I need to get out of here. And, but I stayed by the grace of God. I don't know what made me stay, but I stayed and I started to relate, especially to the people that would come and share at AR, because they were there, you know, by no real affiliation other than to tell their stories. They weren't getting paid. They were driving like 45 minutes from Austin to AR to the ranch to come tell their stories and talk. And I knew like that's something real. And it wasn't even like altruistic, right? They'll tell you right on the spot. It has nothing to do with being a good person or not even helping out, but they were doing it for themselves. They were doing it for their sobriety. And I always thought it to be super ironic. Like God must have been thinking to himself, how am I going to get this load of egotistical fuckers to help, to be of service, but still, you know, just sit there and talk about themselves for an hour? Oh, I know. I'll send them to rehab centers. It's perfect. And sure enough, man, a couple of them got to me. And slowly but surely, I started to open up. I started to listen. And I made it. I made it through the program, 30 days. And by the grace of God, I ended up in a sober living facility with a group of guys that took the program seriously, that went to meetings on a regular basis, that talked about the way they were feeling, that talked about their emotions. And, you know, just it was completely new to me, but I had experienced it in rehabs, but not really out of rehab. And I was blessed. I was blessed that the temptation wasn't right there in front of me. I was blessed that God put me in a spot where it wasn't like right there in my face. And so I just kind of went along with it. I just kind of started going to the meetings. I got a sponsor. You know, I started working the steps. I took suggestions. Man, I used to hate those sayings, you know, one day at a time. Oh my goodness. You can't think your way into the right action, but you can act your way into the right thinking and all this shit. And I would just, oh my God, it drive me crazy. And now it's like the cornerstone of my program. Like I love those sayings. It's kind of silly, but you know, like I just did it and I was around those people and I got a home group. Like I had mentioned earlier, Knuckleheads is my home group. It's a men's meeting. I love that place. I love those guys. You know, it was the kind of place where you go, you get a service commitment. If you don't show up, you got people texting you, asking you, hey, where you at? What's going on? You know, you have that accountability and it really led me to great things. You know, and somewhere around the 6 month mark of my sobriety, I can pretty distinctly remember because I was working at Gloria's Latin Cuisine and I used to serve margaritas. And when they'd spill on my hand, there was like this urge, this hardcore temptation just to lick it off of my hand. Like I wanted it so bad. And one day I spilled like a whole margarita on my hand and there was absolutely no temptation. There was nothing, like there was no urge, like the obsession had been lifted and it was put to the test, not only with alcohol, but with like weed. I was one of those guys, like I'm gonna smoke weed till the day I die kind of person, you know? And we'd go play soccer after work and they'd be passing around a joint after the game. And there was absolutely no urge for me to take that joint and hit it. Right. I was so focused on what was going on and things were starting to work out. Things never worked out in my life, you know? And the weirdest thing is they were starting to work out because I was starting to slowly let go of having to control every single thing around me in every situation. And, you know, just that idea that it's weak to rely upon something or someone was starting to fade. And, you know, I was able to just make little decisions, like the smallest little things were presented to me every day. And the program made it very clear for me to decide. It was like that voice of right and wrong that was never there before because it was probably so cloudy from all the drugs and alcohol was super present and was just like, yeah, it's obvious, dude. Like you do this. And if I choose not to do that, well, then I'm choosing it. Like I'm very, very, very aware of my action at that point. And so slowly but surely, I start to develop this relationship with my higher power, whatever that means. You know, it's evolved in the last 5 years a lot, But it's funny that I don't have to react as much. Like, I don't have to react to situations. I can really like live life on life's terms. And that's where I'm going to tie back into that whole casino thing. So at my 2 year sober date, 2 years sober, literally 2017 on December 18th, I fly to Germany. I'm all high and mighty. I've been sober for 2 years. I called the prosecution over there, was like, "Hey, is there anything like stopping me from coming over there?" They're like, no, of course not. Come on over." My dumbass believed it, right? I'm like, yeah, like God's got my back. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this is, you know, like God would never put me in a bad situation. Like, and you know, I fly into Frankfurt and I got two suitcases full of presents for my grandparents and my uncles. And cause my whole dad's side of the family, they're all in Germany. They're all German. They don't really speak any English. and I get over there and I show them my passport when I'm walking through, you know, the border at the airport, customs or whatever. And they're like, "Oh, Mr. Opaska, got a few warrants out for your arrest. I'm going to have to ask you to come with us, sir." Oh, man, they put me in a little cell in the airport. And a million thoughts are just racing, going through my head, right? I'm like, what in the world is going on? Like, what have I done to myself? How did I get here? Like, what is happening? And because of the program, I was able to accept my situation, first of all. I was able to be like, okay, whew, deep breath, a million thoughts. Let's turn that thought process off and let's just give it to God. This is obviously what God wants for me right now, which is would have been unimaginable for me in the past. Like, it would have all been like, fuck the police and fuck this and it's their fault and this people. And like, I would have been throwing blame all over the place. And it was okay at that moment, you know? And that means a lot. Cause I was, you know, I was in college. I had started going to college when I was 28 and I had a year and a half under my belt. I had a new car that was almost paid off, but wasn't. So that disappeared. My apartment disappeared. The girlfriend disappeared. That took like 6 months, but everything disappeared. And God put me in a place to learn some freaking humility, because I had lost that in those first 2 years of sobriety. There was a lot of, I was doing meetings and this and that, but there was a lot of like playing around with a bunch of different girls and not thinking I was more spiritual than I was, right? On that high horse. And I think God really wanted to like bring me back down to earth. Like, dude, you're nothing, man. Don't forget where you come from. You're dust, and to dust you shall return. Anyway, so he puts me in this place and I'm in Frankfurt for a couple months. I'm waiting to go to court. They send me down to Munich. I wait another 6 months to go to court in Munich. So now I've been there for about 9 months, but he puts me in this place of like, I become a trustee within a few weeks of me getting down there to Munich, and I become part of the church. I had pushed the church so far away my entire life, and I was able to reconnect. And I had this amazing pastor that like was so open-minded that we related on so many levels. And I'm like super into science. And that's, you know, another reason why I kind of pushed my like Christianity away was because I just couldn't make the two relate. Cause a lot of people were telling me, no, that's not possible. And this guy tied it all together. He's like, man, science is the closest you can get to God. And I mean, this guy was amazing. So I just had these great experiences and I got to learn a lot. And we would meet every morning for coffee and we would just talk about the politics of the prison and how to help out and how to be of service and talk about, and I would bring, and AA was everywhere. It was all around me. Like, I didn't even have a big book and I was using AA 24/7, and it just amazed me, man. By month 10, I finally go to court, and this is the big court date. I'm sitting time for some past stuff, but I almost completed that time because, you know, it was only like a year and a half, and you can even get 2/3 time served. But I'm about to go to court for the big case, the whole casino, all that crap. Right. And the prosecutor is like sitting there like, "You're getting, you know, 7 years. We got to get rid of you. You know, this is all you're doing. And I just got up there and I just told the truth. You know, I just went up there and I told my story. I told them that I wasn't denying anything. I told them, yeah, I did. I did what I did. I told them my story. I told them how I was addicted to heroin, how I got sober, what I've been doing with the past 2 years of my life, the accomplishments I've made, and I hoped for the best. And the judge gave me probation. She gave me parole, basically, / probation, Bewährung is what it's called in German. And it was just such a blessing. I got to go home 3 months later, you know? So like 13 months later, I'm like coming back to Austin and in this whole different position, man. I come back to Knuckleheads and everybody at Knuckleheads is just like so glad to see me. I hadn't seen anybody in a long time. These people were writing me while I was over there, like absolutely insane. And I come back with a new sense of humility and a new sense of what I need to do and what I need to focus my efforts on, you know. But just like anything, I'm very human, and very, very quickly I start to let that humility slide, and that effort, the effort that I put in, which is basically just keeping a connection to my higher power, right? So like making it a point to pray every day, making it a point to reflect upon my day and do my nightlies and actually doing, making it a point to be of service whenever I'm asked to be of service. A guy I really like, he always says that service begins where convenience ends. And I love that. I love that because it's like me having to go out of my way to do something. That's when, if it's not affecting me in any way, then it doesn't matter. But if you're willing to inconvenience yourself to do something, you're putting in a little more effort, right? And so that's basically where I'm at with my program. Is it's a back and forth. It's a touch the burner. It's get closer and closer to the burner. And oh shit, I got burnt. It's time to dig deep back into my program. And then, you know, slowly as life gets bigger and life gets better, kind of distance myself away. Cause dude, I have responsibilities now. I have this badass job. I'm almost done with my bachelor's. I'm about to go to get my doctorate for physical therapy. Like I have awesome shit going on in my life. I don't have time to do my nightlies every day. And sure enough, it's so freaking obvious. When I don't, every time I get away, I'm more irritable. I'm discontent. You know, I'm reacting to life. That reaction that I used to have is coming back when I'm not putting in the effort I need to put in. Right. Cause like I would much rather not react to anything that goes on around me. It's so easy. If you're spiritually fit, or I found if I was spiritually fit and I'm doing everything that I can to stay in touch with God and, you know, be of service and be a part of the fellowship, if I'm just doing my part, as simple as that, then anything in life can hit me and I'm going to be okay with it. I can get locked up. I can, you know, get some crazy $6,000 bill in the mail. Like, I don't know, whatever happens, I can be okay with it. I don't have to freak out because it's not going to help anything anyway, right? I'm just going to leave it up to God. I'm just going to put it in God's hands. And it's a learning experience. It's a constant tug of war. I feel like me and God are playing tug of war with the rope, you know, and I do my best to let him have it and give it to him. You know, it's not always easy. It's not always easy to let him have all the control, but I open up my big book and I read that part. I read, you know, about being the director, being the guy that plays does the show, the whole show, wants to control the whole show, the lights, the everything. And the show doesn't come off well. So that's just part of, like I said, where I'm at now. And I'm so blessed, y'all. Like I have so much to be grateful for. I have an amazing family. I have a beautiful daughter. I have the most amazing wife in the world. I get to live with my grandmother. She's here living with us. I get to be a respected member of my community nowadays. My family looks up to me. Friends call me and ask me for advice. Like I was never that person, you know? And then there's like, I started my own company. There's all the superficial stuff, right? I started my own company. I can afford a new car and my house and whatever. Like, I can live comfortably, but that's all minute compared to the one simple thing this program gives me that is the most beautiful part of this whole deal for me, which is that ease and comfort, that sense of ease and comfort that same feeling I had that first time I shot dope, believe it or not. That's something I have continually through working this program. It's something that I, you know, that I get to experience on a regular basis, is to just be okay, to be okay with myself, to be okay with God, to be okay with my fellows, and not be so reactive to life. And it's been a huge blessing. If you're new, keep coming back, put in the work, put in the effort. It makes a huge difference. It has for me. And we're not perfect. You know, we're gonna make mistakes. We're gonna fall off, and we're gonna get back up, and we're gonna keep moving. And that's just been the key to my whole recovery and my whole program. And fellowship has been so important, connecting with people, having friends in the program, sharing your ideas, sharing your thoughts, sharing your nightlies, even, you know, if you trust that person, checking in with each other every day, maybe just a text message. Hey, how did your prayer and meditation go today? Oh, didn't do it. Oh, shit. Maybe I should, you know, like, I don't know, just putting in the effort and leaving the results up to God. That's all I got, y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, that was awesome, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Y'all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're awesome.
The baby's feeling you.